back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. Hope everyone out there is doing well. The break is finally over. UFC 324 rapidly approaching. Of course, the card takes a huge hit. A little less than 2 weeks out, Kayla Harrison suffers a devastating neck injury, requires surgery out of her title defense against Amanda Nunes. Just a very tough blow to this event, to this division, to obviously both fighters. And, you know, we love Kayla. We've had her on the show many times, and we wish her a speedy recovery. Obviously, should focus on, you know, getting healthy more so than trying to rush back for a fight, in my opinion. But we'll see what happens with that. It's just a real tough one to take so close to the fight. And we saw her emotion in the statement that she released. But the game goes on, the show goes on, and UFC 324 is still a pretty solid fight card in my estimation. Don't think you needed a replacement there. Don't think you need to scrap something crazy together at the last minute, like a Joshua Van versus Manel Kapp on 12 days notice or something. I think the card is pretty solid in its own right. Of course, not the optimal start to the Paramount era for the UFC, but this has been an issue over the course of the entire time I've been covering the sport. Big fights falling apart at the last minute. This time they cannot save it, but as I said a few times, still a great card. And we are going to start looking ahead at everything that's to come. We did some great year-end shows, some nice 2026 look-ahead content, but the real stuff begins now in terms of previewing UFC 324 and talking MMA news. Joining me to do so will be none other than Chael Sonnen. He is here, he is back, and we have a great time talking about five big questions I had for him around UFC 324 and its storylines, from Paddy Pimblett to Justin Gaethje and some other main card fights. And then we talked a little bit of other things towards the end. And then after that, joining me will be my MMA junkie colleague, Nolan King. And we are going to kind of go a little bit of a deeper dive into this Paramount era. How are things looking so far, a few days out from the first event, from various angles? Is this a disappointing start? What is going to be expected? How do we define success? All these different things me and Nolan will go over ahead of these next 7 years with the UFC and Paramount, the $7.7 billion deal they signed. So appreciate everyone being here. Please make sure to write, to like, rate, subscribe, comment, follow, share with a friend, all those different things to help the show going. Means a lot to me. And yeah, let's do this thing. The Bonfire is here. I will be back on the other side of the break with Chael Sonnen. We are back here on the Bonfire. We need a big guest for a big fight week. UFC 324 finally here. Couldn't do it with anyone else but Chael Sonnen. Chael, how are you?
I am awesome. I'm happy to see you, buddy. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, thank you for being here.
Did you hear
here.
Chimaev died? Did you hear this rumor about the car wreck?
Jeez, yes. No, we thankfully confirmed that is not true. So, yes, yeah. glad he is in good health. And, yeah, hopefully we can
That's
get
right.
him into a fight sooner than
That's
later.
That's right. But by the way, I didn't say that like in levity. I said that to get that out to the audience that it wasn't true. Do you remember when Kimo died? Do you remember when that rumor
Kimbo.
Went on the internet?
Or yes. Kimo, too. Kimo. Yes. I remember the Kimo one.
And yes. It lasted for several days. Like, the internet's a much bigger thing now. It was a little slow, and it actually took him coming out to go, "Hey, guys, I'm hearing about this. I want you to know I'm alive and well." It's one of those things. It's one of those really weird things to start a rumor about. Yeah. Like, I can't really imagine starting a rumor about somebody's death. It's a very strange thing. Unless somebody thought it was true.
Yeah, I mean, you got to confirm these things with multiple people. I mean, it's the whole thing. This is journalism 101. This is what they teach you on day one, Chael, when you walk into a class. So it's disappointing that it's still happening, but nevertheless, he is okay. I confirm that. So let's get right into it, Chael.
All UFC right, 324. Fine. You know what? Fine. What? Is
yes,
it
I got. I got five
about?
Big
what
questions for
hurry.
You
fine.
Around UFC
Go.
324. Okay, so question one, Chael. What is everyone so wrong about when it comes to Justin Gaethje versus Paddy Pimblett? I saw you post this on Threads. This was a Threads exclusive. Everyone's wrong about Gaethje versus Paddy. What is everyone wrong about?
Okay, the basic storyline here that's lazy. It's very lazy, and it's very 1993-ish, by the way, is that you have a stand-up fighter versus a ground fighter. If Paddy can get him down and he wins, and if it stays on the feet, then Gaethje wins. And I know that those of us that have been around from the beginning, like have that instilled somewhere, but we haven't really seen that in close to 20 years. What would be a great example? Conor McGregor had just boxed Floyd Mayweather. So we all believe that, you know, if he was standing up with Khabib versus on the ground with Khabib, and then, you know, the big shot of the night was landed by Khabib. I don't know why that example just came to me. I guess I'm just sharing with you. We don't really know that Justin Gaethje can't protect himself on the ground. He is an All-American wrestler, even though he never uses it. But we also don't really have evidence that Paddy the Batty can't, you know, punch and clinch and kickbox. And it's just one of those things. I feel like everybody's got that wrong. By the way, Justin Gaethje, I thought, would be the favorite going into this fight. I was a little bit surprised he was a 2-1 underdog. And I wonder where that comes from. Maybe because he's the older fighter. It's a very strange thing. Like in most sports, you get credit for experience. It's like, well, he's got the experience, or he's done more main events, or he's had more title fights. But you don't in this sport. It's like the guy with less has the advantage. Less years, less fight, less miles, less main events, less title fights, less rounds, less octagon time. And a lot of times, historically, that does turn out to be true. I don't know why that is in our sport, but I just feel like the Paddy Gaethje story is a little upside down.
And it is interesting. Paddy Pimblett did a media scrum and a media workout at the Apex, and he said that his goal is to knock Justin Gaethje out. Everyone's underestimating him on the feet. He does not plan to take him down, all that stuff. So it seems like he's very confident. And his quote was, Justin Gaethje's kind of a boxer with leg kicks. I'm a complete MMA striker.
Hey, I think that's wise, though. If you go into a fight and you're straight to take him down, there is nothing worse in a fight than getting tired. A combat athlete's biggest fear, this is wrestling, jiu-jitsu, any form of combat, his biggest fear is not failure or losing. A combat athlete's biggest fear is exhaustion. It's the number one thing he's thinking about in the locker room. Like when a fighter tells you I'm confident in a press conference, he doesn't mean that I can beat this guy. He just means I'm confident, I worked hard, I think that my, you know, if it's a 15-minute fight, I think I can go 13 and a half minutes and I'll figure out the other 90 seconds when I'm out there. Like that's what confidence means. If a guy goes, hey, I'm not that confident, it just means he's not sure he can make it to the end of the fight. Just so you understand that concept. Mm-hmm. With that said, the hardest thing you can possibly do is a takedown. There is no punch or kick or submission. There is nothing harder than a takedown. So if you go for a takedown and you don't get it, it's very bad news. Like, you wanted the takedown because you didn't want to be on your feet, so now you're stuck on your feet, except more tired than you were a moment ago when you decided to get the fight off the feet. It's a big deal that Paddy is planning to knock him out or planning to stand with him, because nobody's going to go take Justin Gaethje down 5 times. You know, it's just that it's very unrealistic goal. Paddy's going to have to win some sequences and some rounds on his feet. He didn't have to knock him out, but he's going to have to win some moments on his feet for sure.
Do you believe he can do that? I mean, he's out there saying, I've never had a war. I'd love to have a war with the king of wars. You know, I can strike with Gaethje on the feet. And then people will say, you barely got past Jared Gordon in a mostly striking fight. Obviously, that was a few years ago. Fighters improve, everything like that. But the most recent version of Paddy that we've seen, the one that beats Michael Chandler a little better maybe, is he capable of winning an all-striking fight with Justin Gaethje?
I don't know. I know, great analysis, Chan. Glad I had you on. But if I could just be very candid with you, my thoughts on Paddy, because I think it's very relatable. Mm-hmm. I thought that Paddy was an interesting guy that was a regional fighter that, with good placement on the card, particularly fight nights, could sell some tickets around England. This is what I thought Paddy was. And mm-hmm. But I must tell you, he's dealt with adversity. He's dealt with a knee injury. Paddy's not some little boy like people think he is. This guy's married. He's got kids. Like, Paddy's not the guy we thought he was just because he's got a good quip and a weird hairdo. Like, it turns out he's a real professional. And it also turns out, at least from my perspective, I haven't seen anything that disqualifies his potential of being a world champion. I've seen him come back. I've seen him, you know, behind in fights and come back. I think it's 2 or 3 fights where he's lost the first round and he's had to put a pace on a guy. And we didn't know if he had that. One thing that we questioned on Paddy, you know, when they call him Fatty the Batty because his weight was going up and down, that appeared to be a lack of discipline. And usually it is, but not every time. There's certain guys. I had a teammate in college named Doug Lee. He could gain weight and he could lose it. You'll know a fighter named Mark Munoz. Mark could gain weight and he could lose it. But the losing the weight was a byproduct of, you know, getting into really good shape. So I just share, like, I don't know where Patty's holes are. I haven't seen a weakness. In fact, I've seen growth. His wrestling, or the ground and pound that he put on Michael Chandler. Like, that dude is getting better. And not a lot of guys do. You know, you get signed to the UFC and you kind of try to hold it right there. Then you got a maturity where maybe you get a bump just for puberty and, you know, your man strength and whatever steroids you're getting past the test. Like, there's weight, but you don't really get that much better at this sport. He is actually getting better in certain areas. And yeah, why would we think he couldn't stand up with somebody?
I'm curious to see how that ultimately goes. We'll get into Justin in a moment and his desire to screw up all the plans, but do you think the UFC is rooting for Patty here? Like, this is the ideal outcome. They originally wanted him versus Ilya on this card. That was the plan. So I imagine that's still somewhere in the back of their minds.
I love those conspiracies. And there was a time, by the way, like, there was a time when they were building towards a fight and not only wanted someone to win, kind of needed them to win. And I really haven't seen that in about 7 or 8 years. Like, Dana White made a brand promise that the best are going to fight the best and we're not going to be like boxing. And he has held to that. So, you know, is there somebody that's better for business that you kind of, maybe, but I haven't seen somebody get protected since I don't know. Let me give you an example to the opposite, by the way. Sean O'Malley is the biggest star in the sport. We're going to go to Sphere. The worst matchup possible is Merab. They give him Merab. The second biggest draw in the sport at that time, I'm going back, is Alex Pereira. The worst possible matchup for Alex Pereira is this unknown guy named Ankalaev. They give him Ankalaev. They brought their two biggest stars down back to back, and they knew that was going to happen. I mean, the days of them protecting somebody or wanting someone to win. Let me just tell you, as a fan, by the way, I'm guilty of it too. Like, there's times we'll go into a fight and I go, okay, I want this guy to win so that I can get this matchup. And then all of a sudden, something changes that really fast. Like, I really wanted to see Arman Tsarukyan take on the winner, Charles Oliveira, Ilya Topuria. And then all of a sudden, Patty jumps in the ring and steals all the thunder. So, okay, now I want to see Patty versus Ilya, and we'll get to Arman in a minute. And then Gaethje comes in out of nowhere, and it ends up being a main event over the women's fight, which is just enough drama to get my interest. So, I don't know. Is there anybody that we actually want to win? Like, there's a story in so many different directions, particularly at 155. It is such a good problem to have where Lerone Murphy is going through it right now. And it's not fair and it's terrible for him. But I'm just sharing, like, that weight class has three or four guys that have an argument. You know, Ilovev, there's three or four guys that have this argument. And their argument's really good. But you have to choose one of them. So, yeah, sure. Do they want him to win? Sure. Do they want Gaethje to win? Sure. I think, what do we all really want? I think we really want Ilya back. I think Ilya is a massive star. I don't really know what's going on there. He's been a real stand-up guy. You know, he could have held up the division. He could have faked an injury. He didn't. He tried to give the belt back. He told the truth, which is, I'm not going to fight for a little bit. I'm not injured. He tried to give the belt back. They didn't accept it.
Question two on Justin Gaethje. How does him winning impact this whole lightweight title picture? Because we talk about the storylines, we talk about the heat. Justin Gaethje doesn't have heat with any of these guys, really. Like, you know, Patty has an issue with Armin and Ilya. Ilya has an issue with Armin and Patty. Justin has nothing with anyone, just besides the fact he wants what they have, and that's the belt. So, like, him winning, I think, is maybe the least interesting of all possible outcomes as far as pushing this division and making it the most interesting going forward.
Can I have that? Can I steal what you just said?
Absolutely.
Because that's fantastic. Okay. And I've never thought about it like that. The odd man out, if you're looking at promotion, you're exactly right. It's Justin Gaethje. I mean, Justin Gaethje's big seat at the table is what Anik says about him. He's every fighter's favorite fighter.
Yeah.
That is a very interesting point by you. And that's not going to change. Like, he's too much of a veteran. And there is something weird. I went through it, too, when I stuck around in my career. There was something weird about calling out the younger guy or teasing the younger guy. There was something about it when you become the respected one in the locker room because of seniority. Where it gets weird to go out and tease or poke your finger in somebody's chest. So that is a very good point, man. What are they going to do if Gaethje wins? Like, I think he works. He's just a main event guy. But You're right. The press conferences and telling the story. And why are we here? I need that as a fan. Like, I've seen enough cage fights. I need to know, why are we here? What does this matter? What is your problem? What is your deal? And it's a very real thing. I ended up in that spot one time, if I can tell a quick story. I was fighting on a Monty Cox show. I was out in Chicago, and I get in a cage with a guy named Terry Martin. And Terry Martin was an old wrestler. I knew him from our wrestling days. He always had a singlet on. When I get ready to fight him, he takes his shirt off. The poor guy had been shot, but he'd been shot like six times and survived it. Yeah, I'm looking across the ring at this guy. I don't know anyone here. I got paid $500 to fly in on one day's notice. And I'm literally thinking, I don't know this guy. From what I do know about him from wrestling days and seeing him around, I like him. I got no, what am I doing here? Why? I'm literally in the cage thinking, why are we about to fight? And just then the referee points and goes, are you ready? And it's like, yeah, I guess. But it was a real thing where you kind of need a why.
I love the James or the Terry Martin name drop. I was first UFC event I went to, UFC 67. I believe he got knocked out in 14 seconds by James Irvin. Yes. Shout out to that name too. So yeah,
James Irvin gave him a flying knee. Yeah. And I had never been mentioned on the UFC. I'm a huge fan. I'm at home watching my buddies. And James Irvin credited me. He said, hey, my buddy Chael Sonnen fought him and hit him with a few flying knees, so I threw this flying knee. I never had a beautiful – James Irvin was so – remember, he was all ripped up. He hit this beautiful flying knee through the air. But he said my name. He said my name on the UFC. So all my friends thought that was really cool, and I did too. But I remember that. Terry Martin could have been a champion, but he did play a risky game. He go out and box with guys like Vitor. He boxed with guys like Chris Leben, you know, that were at all times in their career one punch away from ending your night. And he ended up on the wrong side of it a few times. But Terry Martin could go with anybody. Terry Martin's a tough son of a bitch. Yeah, he got shot eight times and lived. Terry Martin qualifies as a tough guy.
Absolutely. What do you think of the whole Justin Gaethje retirement element? Like, you imagine he's not going to have a better chance than this to touch a piece or any UFC gold again. Is this it for him if he loses? Trevor Whitman making some comments about the
Ethan
future.
Ethan goes down every day and he gets himself the same coffee. And every day when he goes, I cross my fingers that he's going to bring me one too. How do you like that? Huh?
There you go.
It's disgusting. It's cold. He gets cold brew and he puts a little cream. Like, see how pretty this looks? It's disgusting. It's cold brew and cream. This guy's all skinny and fit. I don't think he, like, eat carbs or something like this. Terrible coffee, but it doesn't shop. What was the question? Why are you distracting me? What is your question, Bohen?
Is this Justin Gaethje's final fight?
Remember that time you got married and you didn't invite me, you little prick?
Remember that.
And then you tell me, oh, I can't do such and such because I'm getting married. It's like, I'm not going to come to Canada. You throw the invite out. It's just something you say. I'm not coming. I would have sent you a gift, though. I'll be at your next wedding. I hope you've learned your lesson.
Yes, I have. Very much so, Chael.
What's the question?
What's Justin Gaethje's future? Is this going to be his final fight if he loses?
I got to take him at his word. Okay. This is cutthroat, but it's a cutthroat business. I really like Justin. I like to be respectful when I speak about Justin. There'd be no reason to fight anymore. There'd be no reason. The UFC is for people who are champions or are future champions. And once you prove, at least in theory, there's exceptions, but once you prove I no longer qualify as that, I for sure am not going to be champion. In theory, your time is then done. Justin Gaethje could get more fights and Justin Gaethje would be shown exception, but I don't know that he would want that. He is a true competitor. I mean, he really wants to be champion. That's what this whole thing's about. He's got one of the great coaches ever that doesn't quite get enough credit, Trevor Whitman. Trevor gets credit, but not enough. Trevor Whitman is truly a special mind when it comes to MMA, leader of men. But Trevor said this is our last run. Trevor's not looking to train guys and spend time. I mean, he's looking for the next champion. So I'm going to say yes. I don't think Justin, I think he puts the gloves down. And that concerns me, by the way. You know, when a guy starts talking that way, historically speaking, it doesn't go their way. But not every time. You do have to wonder, why is he speaking that way? And, you know, it's the famous story of burning your ships. You burn your ship so that you have to conquer the country. You can't go back. And so sometimes an athlete will put himself in a position of urgency. And I think that's what Justin's doing here, at least attempting to do. I don't think he wants to be done. I think he wants to win that belt and go defend it a few times.
Yeah, no, he has the big retirement plan goal. He wins this fight. He beats Ilya. Then he avenges a loss to either Max Holloway or Charles Oliveira. So
you know,
he's
I was a little annoyed. Can I tell you, I was a little annoyed with Justin for this reason. He said, you know, here's what I've done. I've done X, Y, and Z. I deserve a title shot. Give me a title shot or I'm out of here. I'm going, wait a minute, Justin, in your last four fights, two of them were for a title. It was for the BMF title. In fact, you were the champion. You're the one that brought the belt to UFC 300. And the reason I was annoyed with him is I felt like he was taking his own glory away. I feel like the guys that win the BMF don't really know what a big deal that is. That's a very rare title, and it's a very real title. We have three titles in the UFC. That's not very many. You got an interim, and you got the undisputed, and you got the BMF. I mean, that's just the game that we play. And he should have been more proud, and he should have recognized those as championships. I do. I recognize that as a champion. If somebody said Justin Gaethje was never champion, I'd say he was a two-time champion. He was an interim champion. He was the BMF champion. Justin Gaethje is one of the most successful fighters there's been.
Yep, and he can be the first two-time interim champion if he wins this one. So we'll see what happens there on the main trail.
Well, look at Ilya Topuria, by the way. Look at Ilya Topuria. If it wasn't for paperwork, if it was just competition, he would have been simultaneously the 45-pound champion, the 55-pound champion, and the BMF champion. I mean, imagine that poster. That would have really been something special. Just how good is Ilya Topuria? You know, I've asked some 55-pounders privately, big names. I've asked Gaethje. I've asked Poirier. I've asked Chandler. I've asked some big names privately. Hey, man, is this guy as good as they say? And all of them are like, oh, yeah. Yeah, he's frightening. I'm like, really? You know, these guys are really successful. They're not scared of anybody. They've been there with everybody. I go, really? Have we seen enough? Have we really seen enough of Ilya to decide that he's pound for pound the greatest fighter in the world? And they're like, yeah, his boxing and his hands and his wrestling, it's like okay. I mean, if those guys say so, who are you and I to argue, right?
Agreed. Yeah. Are you confident he fights the winner of this? Seems like things are maybe getting better on his end. Paddy said he would fight Armin if it came to that, if Ilya's not available, but is your expectation that sometime in the summer we see this title get unified?
No. Now I will take him at his word. I just haven't heard him say that. And he used some interesting wording, at least from what I saw. And he used the term quarter. He said, I'm not going to fight in the first quarter of next year. And, you know, so you're getting a calendar out. That's not really how people speak. You know, he said quarter, but he didn't say I'm going to fight in the second quarter, or he didn't say I'm going to fight in the third quarter. His exact words from what I saw was, I'm not going to fight in the first quarter. Yeah. So, and by the way, if I may use this as an opportunity, let's talk about Sarukian real fast, because we need to get him a get out of jail card. He has paid whatever debt we believe that he owes. When he went out there to be a backup fighter that night, when he went through a training camp, when he got licensed, when he flew out to Vegas, when he made weight, when he was willing to go in on 24 hours notice against possibly Oliveira or possibly Ilya Topuria. That moment is when we were even. He then went a step further and went and fought Dan Hooker. Now, that the headbutt was bad, Sarukian's got a switch. He needs to control his switch a little bit, but he's taking grappling matches and wrestling matches, and he's doing interviews, and he's speaking well about the company. And at some point, you got to forgive a guy. We need to forgive him. Do you agree with me? We need to forgive him. That dude is special. He's great. Let's not take some of his best years away because we're mad at him.
I agree. And he's, you know, doing the grappling matches. He's making weight for those. He's getting exposure on it with all these streamers. Like, he's very out there. So, yeah, he needs the opportunity this
year. You want to know
so
what hopefully. I want? You want to know from Sarukian? I want him to invite me to a dinner. He's like eating camel, and he's always eating lamb. And he's got
– I know.
I really want to go to one of those meals.
Jill, let's rip through these last three because I know you got a hard out. So question three here. How worried should Merab Dvalishvili be about these bantamweight fights at UFC 324? I believe he does not have a contract signed for his trilogy fight with Piotr Jan, even though he said he expects it. We got Sean O'Malley there against Song Yadong. We got Umar Nurmagomedov against Davidson Figueiredo. Who knows what could happen with a spectacular performance? Are you kind of worried if you're Merab going into Saturday night?
It's Merab is a big star, and you know, nobody's a star until they're a star. I've been around Merab when nobody knew what a Merab was, and I've been around Merab at times where you can't even get to him. You know, the crowd is so big. Like, and I watched it happen. I happened to be there in California. He was a co-main event. It was against Nurmagomedov, but that was his coming out moment. He was already champion, but he wasn't over. That's when he got over. So I think there's something very big. I mean, everybody has to worry. Nobody's guaranteed anything. But I think that Merab's got a lot of options. One thing that people are not talking about, and they're going to at some point, and it's a conversation that Merab has to kick off, he's going to be a 45-pounder. And so all of a sudden you have all sorts of different parity. Like, he's going to stay at 35 and try to do this thing with Piotr Jan, but he can't make 35 for very much longer. He just can't. He's just a big guy. So I think he can get a title shot at 35, and he's going to, but I've never seen a way to get a fresh coat of paint and get new, fresh opportunities quite like changing weight classes. Generally, historically speaking, you change a weight class, you win one fight, you go right for the belt. But I only share that with you that not only will Merab get a title shot, Merab is arguably a number one contender at two different weight classes.
Which fight interests you the most out of the three? Piotr Jan versus Merab, Piotr Jan versus Umar, or Sean O'Malley?
You know, you can't get that kind of analysis anywhere. Sometimes I hear the words I'm saying to you, and I hear the brilliance, and I understand why you invited me on. What's the question?
Which fight interests you the most for Piotr Jan? Sean O'Malley, Umar Nurmagomedov, or Merab?
Okay. Sean O'Malley. Controversy, first fight. I remember that one. I was cheering for Sean, in full disclosure. I did not think they were going to raise Sean's hand. I didn't have a problem with it like some people did. It was a really, really close fight, but I just share. Even Sean was surprised. Like Sean's a really honest guy. He's like, man, I didn't know if I won that fight. So I just think that they might have a little piece of unfinished business that even Piotr Jan would like to square up, and nobody really builds a fight like Sean O'Malley. You want to know a fight that I'm not overly excited for, and I'm trying to, is the Song fight. I don't fully get it. I was a little surprised with the booking just because I didn't get it. I mean, O'Malley's got heat in five different directions, except that one. I don't know that he's ever said Song's name. And so it was just kind of a surprise. It brings me back to a point I was making a minute ago. Why are we here? And I'm not clear on this fight. Is this a number one contender's fight? Does the winner fight for the belt? Is that for sure? Why are we here? Why are these guys about to fight? Why are we putting one of our biggest stars against Song, which is a wildly dangerous match? And I'm open to any answer, but I think it's a fair question by me. Why are we doing this fight?
Yeah, I assume it was because of the matchup, maybe someone that will stand with Sean, but we'll
see. Yeah, I mean in a good way, by the way. I don't mean it in a negative way, but I just think, you know, there's a week to go, and if these guys are going to go out and do media, I hope that they answer that question. Why are you guys fighting?
Question four, Chael. In 2026, are we going to be talking about the winner of Derek Lewis versus Waldo Cortez Acosta as a legitimate heavyweight title challenger? Not just like, oh, they're in the thing, like, oh, this guy could actually be scheduled to fight for the belt this year.
No, in short. However, I've never seen opportunity. Like I could tell you how to win the Super Bowl. I could tell you to go to college and get drafted and make a team and make the playoffs and have more points than the other guy and do that over and over, and all of a sudden you win the Super Bowl. I could tell you on any sport. I could tell you how to win the Olympics. I could tell you how to be a state champion. I can't tell you how to get into the UFC. It's a huge question that every fighter will ask. I mean, I've been asked this a million times by an aspiring fighter. Hey, how do I get in the UFC? It's like, well, let me tell you what most guys do. But there is no answer that I've ever given better than be ready at all times, scour the internet, and contact the matchmaker when somebody pulls out. There is no better answer than being ready on short notice. Now, I tell you that whole story to let you know, the fans would love nothing more than to see Derek Lewis in a title fight. Derek Lewis matches up kind of interesting with today's heavyweights. Like, the only guy that's going to really run through Derek is a really good wrestler, of which isn't currently signed to the UFC. We've never had a time, or an era, where we have no wrestlers. I came through the NCAA. I'm not just talking about we don't have Olympians or medalists. I'm not just talking about we don't have NCAA All-Americans. We don't have anybody that's been in the NCAA tournament. I don't just mean in the top 10. I'm talking about under contract. The UFC heavyweight division currently has zero wrestlers. And Derek Lewis matches up really well. Now, how are you going to get him in there at 40 years old? It's got to be a short-notice fight. It's got to be something happens and you put him in. And by the way, if you were to throw him in on a week's notice against Cyril Gane or even against Tom Aspinall, he's got a real chance. He's not as good as those guys, but he's ever been as dangerous as those guys. They could knock him out, but he could knock them out too. So, no, we're not going to be talking about the winner of that fight for a legit title shot, but for a last-minute replacement, sure. Great guy to turn to would be the winner of that fight.
Yeah, and people are going to jump on you, Chael, when you say no wrestlers. They'll say Curtis Blaydes, but look what Derek Lewis already did to Curtis Blaydes. That rematch isn't in the orbit, so yeah, I think what you're saying Curtis, is still correct.
And Curtis, just for clarity, Curtis is a national champion, a junior college national champion. That's the same championship that John Jones won. It's a very legitimate title, but it wasn't NCAA. So if I used NCAA as a standard, which is kind of a loose standard, it's kind of where a decent wrestler goes. I am correct in the statement, but you were also correct to say that Curtis was a very good wrestler. John Jones was a very good wrestler as well, in fairness.
Yeah, Chael, I know you got a hard out. Do you have two more minutes?
Of course I got 2 minutes.
Okay. All right. I'm going to skip this, make this one question five. Not UFC 324 related, but who should Conor McGregor fight at the White House? Dana White saying Michael Chandler, goodbye. You're no longer in the equation. He didn't even say with certainty, I know Conor's coming back. He said, we'll see what happens. I don't know all these things, but if we do get a Conor McGregor fight and it does happen at the White House and Michael Chandler is not in play, who's the guy?
Yeah, I would love your opinion on this. Because I
wrote down five names.
Sure. Well, okay. So here's the thing. Here's the bad news, okay? The reason that Chandler made a lot of sense is I don't know anything about that fight. I don't know if it's going to be 3 rounds, 5 rounds, co-main event, main event. They're going to make up a belt. I don't know anything about that fight other than I know that fight will not happen at 155 pounds. Conor McGregor is not going to weigh 155 again. Right. So are we going to do a catch weight of 165? Are we going to make it 170? Conor is so out on cutting weight, he'd like to do a fight all the way at 185. Fight like a 55 or 70 pounder, but weigh in at 185. What I'm sharing for you, the reason that Chandler worked is the weight class doesn't matter. The ranking doesn't matter. The fight really doesn't matter. This is about drawing, selling tickets and Conor McGregor. So if you remove Michael Chandler and you insert somebody else, you're telling that guy you don't matter. You're telling that guy it doesn't matter what you weigh. It doesn't matter what the rankings say. You're headed nowhere. Go out there and fight Conor and have some fun while you're doing it. So my larger interpretation was just that Conor was off the card. I know that's not what was said, but why would it not be Chandler? I mean, Chandler does make a lot of sense. One thing about McGregor, and I got to give him credit, is because Red Panty Night is very real. Like, fighting Conor McGregor is a big deal. Conor has never come off of that. Conor has always said, I get to choose. I do what I want, which is accurate. But he's always said, I'm giving it to Mike. Even when he's teased him or joked around, he's come back. He had one just 2 weeks ago where he was acting like he was going to fight Floyd, but he finished it by saying, just kidding, Mike. He's always attempted to fight Chandler. That's the right fight. I got to give Conor credit for that.
So the five names I wrote down, from realistic to maybe crazy, I wrote down Jorge Masvidal, Nate Diaz, Michael Morales, because I do know, Chael, that was a fight discussed for Conor McGregor at one point at welterweight, which seems crazy. The winner of Max Holloway versus Charles Oliveira for the BMF, and then if you just wanted to go absolutely insane, Islam Makhachev for the welterweight title. Those are the five I wrote down. I don't know if it'll be any of them, but any of those jump off the page for you?
Oh, absolutely. Nate Diaz, George Masvidal, huge stars. Yeah. That would be a lot of fun. That's just not the direction that the UFC would go. It's just not. It's just not what they do. I mean, I'll give you a booking that was announced yesterday, but Joe Pfeiffer versus Israel Adesanya. I mean, if there was an ultimate pass the torch moment, it was the signing of that fight. But that's really how it works. So if you're going to do the fans a favor by putting Conor on the card, or you're going to do Conor a favor, you got to write him this great big check. It's not going to be about fun. It's going to be about somebody that's going to come in, grab that can come back and do two or three more fights for the company. And that would disqualify Nate or Masvidal, in my opinion. So we'll see where that goes. I don't know if Islam's got the... I like your list. I like your list. But my guess is, first and foremost, that Conor's not going to be part of this. That Conor's fully retired. Secondly, if he comes back and they write that check, they're going to give him a real guy.
Yeah, that's why I thought, you know, Michael Morales or Shavkat. I don't think those are insane names to drop, but we'll see. The other thing Dana White said in that Complex interview was he was asked about Jones versus Pereira, and his immediate response was at 205. And I've never heard him respond in that way. Do you think if we get this fight, that's what the UFC is going to want? I think you've said this before. I've said this before. That's the way this fight makes the most sense, is John challenging Pereira for that 205 belt that he has so much history with.
That's right. To quote Joe Rogan, that would be the biggest fight in the history of humanity. I don't know that I disagree, you know, for our industry. That is such a massive and mega fight. The one thing that it lacks is a belt. But we can fix that really fast. Have them fight. Just have John come home. Have him come back down to 205 pounds. Let's figure out who the best 205 pounder of all time is. Let's put that up, as well as the current world championship. So I really like that Dana said that. It sounded like Dana was open to the fight, but it's like, guys, work with me a little bit here. Pierre, you're a 205 pound champion. Defend your belt. John, you're a 205 pounder. Come back and, you know, let's do it for the belt. It makes a lot of sense. I don't predict that will happen. I think that John wants to be at heavyweight, but I do like the idea.
And just very quickly, lastly here, Chael, I'm very, you know, I love the media side of things, the talent. You guys are all so great to me. They released the talent lineup for the first Paramount event, UFC 324. To my disappointment, your name was not on there for the desk or anything. Can you give us an update? Are you just taking the show off? Do you have plans to work with Paramount? Are you still with ESPN? Where are we going to see you as far as like UFC programming and things like that in 2026?
No, and thank you for asking. I read that same thing. I read that same thing and also was looking for my name. And I haven't missed a pay-per-view in 7 years, which I say is of great fortune. I'm a fan. I'm just a fan first and foremost. So, you know, it's very cool to be there. I do plan to participate with the new crew and Paramount. And I even plan to be at this event. I wasn't on the list and nobody's told me that I am. Like, my phone hasn't ring, but I do plan to be there. So, maybe that's arrogant, but I do think I will be at T-Mobile next Saturday.
Okay, awesome. And do you have a deal with Paramount yet, or is this things being worked out?
I think that we do.
Okay.
Yes, I think that we do. There is nothing signed, but I believe that I will be part of Paramount.
Awesome. Well, I can sleep easier tonight, Chael, knowing that you are going to be a good place. We'll see more of you. Thank you so much for doing this. It's great as always. UFC 324 coming up, Chael. Always appreciate your time.
You've been in such a rush. Ever since I've got here, you've been trying to get rid of
me. You told me you had a hard out, Chael.
I know I told you I had a hard out. That doesn't mean that you talk faster and you try to cram me. Your job is to try to stall and get me beyond it, and then me to come in and say, I've got it. You know what? Just forget it. We'll do this another time. Goodbye. Goodbye, Mike.
Goodbye. Joined now on the bonfire by my longtime MMA junkie colleague, Mr. Nolan King. And we are going to take a look ahead a little bit to this Paramount era. But Nolan, first of all, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. Excited to be back on. I think I came on like episode, I don't know, it was pretty early on, but it's been fun to see the seven. So it's been fun to see the channel grow. And I'm excited that I'm not, you know, I don't have a behind the scenes ban or anything on here. So
it's
good to be back. Yep.
Appreciate you, man. Yeah, it's a lot to talk about. It's really interesting, right? Because we've been talking about this for months now since this deal was announced between the UFC and Paramount, and seeing how it would go, how the fight cards would come together. And sitting here right now, you know, around a week out from UFC 324, feels like maybe not the ideal start. I mean, of course, from the fight card itself, you could say we don't get, I think, the headliner they were looking for. Justin Gaethje versus Paddy Pimblett is a good fight, but it's not Ilya Topuria versus Paddy Pimblett or the various combinations they were looking for. And then we get hit with this Amanda Nunes, Kayla Harrison fight cancellation, pretty significant injury for Kayla. I guess let's just start there. I mean, how the UFC is not unfamiliar to the stuff they've had. You know, John Jones pulling out a UFC 200 on 3 days notice. So like they've experienced it all, but what do you just make of, I guess, this on the fight card side, rocky start?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a while since we've hit this sort of injury bug, right? That makes you go, wow, like that's a massive fight we just lost. Like maybe the last one was when Connor pulled out against Chandler, but that was a little bit different. You had like a month, you know, to kind of figure out what was going to go on. This, the week before, not ideal, the Paramount debut, which I think was, it was a good card, but you would expect them to come into a new era like this with a bang. And so to have like a solid pay-per-view event start, like, okay, two title fights, you know, they're both kind of intriguing. You can make arguments that maybe the interim title doesn't really mean much, or it's just something that's a little bit slapped together. But I think at face value, it's a very interesting matchup, right? And then you had this fight, which was a tremendous supporting act. There were a whole host of people that thought this should be the headliner. And so to lose it, even though you have a card that has a handful of contender fights below it, it stings, you know. I think for the moment, like they needed everything they could get for this debut, and they seemed not to be able to get the biggest stars, the biggest fights, and then to lose arguably the biggest one on the card is a tough blow.
Yeah, very tough. Okay, let's rewind a little bit, I guess, to before this. You know, they signed this deal. We kind of knew that it was going to take a little time. They want to respect their partnership with ESPN. But, you know, as we get to the UFC 323 in December, we start seeing all this stuff come up, the press conference, the promotion, just leading kind of into this week. We're now seeing the social media side of the Paramount deal come up. Interviews on their new YouTube channel, Twitter accounts, Instagram accounts, all these things, the announcements of the talent that's going to be on the broadcast, largely the same. Kate Scott coming in from the soccer world, I guess, to do some desk hosting. I don't know how frequent that's going to be, but I guess just what have you thought of the rollout so far and just kind of building towards this and what we've kind of seen like on the various things? We saw some promos during the NFL wildcard games. I'm sure there'll be more in the divisional rounds. What have you just made of, I guess, all the shoulder elements of this?
Yeah, I think it's been solid. You know, I wasn't with Junkie when the ESPN deal started. I was hired like a few months after that. So I don't really recall, like from a PR perspective, how ESPN did. Was it just, you know, I don't want to call it a honeymoon phase because we haven't even hit the wedding yet here. But, you know, was there just this really big push at first to try to get people to know that the UFC brand was on their network and kind of going all out? But I think Paramount's done a really nice job with that. Like you said, I think integrating it into their other programming. I mean, we saw, even though it was a weird thing, the Golden Globes integration was something that got people talking. And it was a big stage for the UFC to be featured, even if it was kind of a weird, bungled sort of presentation. So that's been noticeable. The football advertising's been noticeable. You know, them running seemingly like kind of their Paramount kind of runs their own PR as well, which I think is very interesting. We even saw like, them put out the Amanda versus Kayla news where it seemed like they did independently confirm it ahead of time, which, you know, they're not ESPN, they're not a sports website. So they're going an extra length here. You know, they have CBS Sports, but it's not the same sort of beast as ESPN. So I do think that they're putting in effort, which is very nice to see. It'll be interesting to see if that's going to be a continual thing or if it's just this moment in time.
Yeah, I'm curious to see as well. I guess for you, you know, you are the American. For us here in Canada, like it's same old deal. The pay-per-view is going to be $79.99 or whatever on Saturday. And basically everything is the same. But for you down there, like I know they're rolling out some fights, doing their kind of version of Fight Pass over there. I don't know if you've had the chance to stream anything through there or what's kind of been your experience with Paramount Plus and maybe things you've heard from other people who use that platform.
Yeah. So I did, I signed up for Paramount Plus a couple of weeks ago. It was the first time maneuvering around with it. And yeah, I mean, they're slowly rolling out backwards. I think back rolling like the catalog out. They've started with, you know, focusing on the more recent events and some of the superstars. You know, they have the full, fight anthology of Conor McGregor, of Alex Pereira. So I think it's going to slowly expand. You know, it's a little confusing in that you can't necessarily find everything, and some things you might have to find a weird way on there. But overall, I think the interface is good. I mean, to be honest with you, from a consumer standpoint, like the fact that this is, if you pay, you know, without ads, was what, like $120 for the whole year? That wouldn't even be two pay-per-views before. So I think it's a massive win for the consumer of the product, the hardcore fan who wanted to watch them all or did watch them all last year, all the events. So I can't think that that cannot be understated, that this is a big time steal and a big time improvement for people's wallets on the bottom line. So so far so good. I would like to see, you know, what hopefully they can build out that you know, the video library to have all the fights and make it a little bit easier. But so far, so good, you know. And we even saw John Morgan. I don't know if you, I think you caught that as well. Notice that they have multi-cam view pending for UFC 324. So I think that sort of stuff's going to go a long way.
100%. They had that early on Fight Pass. I remember we used to do stories on Junkie. It would always kind of be like the Steven Morocco special for big fights. He would listen back through the corner audio for both corners. And if something very interesting was said, maybe turn it into a story or a social or whatever. So yeah, it creates more interest.
People started getting canceled and they had to stop.
I think they took that away for a reason. Like it didn't just suddenly appear for no reason, right? So I'm curious. We know the UFC loves to control their broadcast more so than anything. So we'll be interested to see if that option exists, if there's, you know, a no commentary option some people have asked for, if you can just hear, you know, the raw broadcast. But it seems like, you know, what more could you ask for if you're a fight fan? I mean, the earlier start time, the removal of pay-per-view, and just this all-in-one subscription, like the building blocks are there. But I guess how are we defining success of this thing, right? Like, I guess we'll start in the small thing before we get into the big picture. But like, you know, all these hits to this card, what do you think their measurement of success for UFC 324 is going to be outside of, you know, the fights being good and all these things, but like signups, driving subscriptions, all these little elements that I'm sure they're looking for and trying to fold the existing UFC audience into the Paramount platform?
Yeah, I'd be fascinated to know behind the scenes how Paramount's viewing this as a win. Is it just something they've accepted? Like, we have the UFC, this is great. We know that, you know, we're going to see all the fighters at some point, yada, yada. But is the incentive gone? I mean, with ESPN, right? Like, they had certain markers that they had to hit to make it a win, you know, for it to be a home run sort of pay-per-view or a triple sort of pay-per-view or a double sort of pay-per-view. You know, I believe they did it like gold, silver, bronze or something. I had heard somebody say at one point. So how do they do that when, you know, there's no money incentive, additional money incentive? People are just paying a flat fee. I don't really, it's a fantastic question. Mm-hmm. You know, they're keeping with the same amount of events. I thought maybe that they would, you know, not force the UFC, but come to terms with the UFC to condense the schedule a little bit, to make a little bit more juice to be squeezed out of every event. But man, I would be interested to know if there's any sort of incentives, you know, on maybe maybe it's like in baseball, right? If in order for a player to get their max contract, they have to hit certain markers. Does the UFC have some sort of, or does Paramount have some sort of baseline that the UFC has to hit in order for the deal to be maximized? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's something that would be very interesting if the UFC was willing to pull back the curtain a little bit, but I don't think they're going to be doing that anytime soon.
No, of course. It's all going to be honest to kind of speculate. I doubt they're going to be, you know, releasing the numbers besides whatever they're forced to publicly. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how engaged people are in this. Cause I assume, you know, it's one thing if you have a Conor McGregor fight kicking off this era or something where, you know, people are going to go out of their way. Like if you're not a UFC fan, like is what they're offering here to kick things off, even if it's the back-to-back numbered events, right? If this one doesn't bring you in, maybe, you know, for whatever, I don't know if this one wasn't bringing you in, why Volk versus Diego Lopez and that card would do the trick. But like, is this doing anything besides getting the people who were subscribed to ESPN Plus for the UFC to come over?
Yeah, I mean, it's so weird. I genuinely think the selling point is like, oh, we don't have to pay for pay-per-views anymore. So it almost, you know, for the casual, for my friends that maybe they order a couple a year, mm-hmm. Kind of the big ones, like I think that that is a huge selling point now where it's like, okay, even if this title fight isn't the biggest, best thing going, if it's not Alex Pereira, if it's not Ilya, if it's not Conor or John, like I can still see UFC title fights for a very low amount of money. So I don't know. It's a weird one, right? Because on one hand, it's like, I think the sport's in a really weird place too, right? Like even thinking of what the home run fights would be for the UFC for this event, I don't know if they would be viewed in the same way as like a home run fight from 2 years ago. Yeah. So that's something I keep considering too, is like, what was the max that they could have gotten here? And so that's kind of where I'm standing, where it's like, it's not a home run. It's not bad. It just kind of is what it is. It's the UFC product, it's title fights, it's the way they operate. But I do think that the deal, right, you're getting hundreds of dollars worth of value for $100, you know, I think that's kind of a weird sort of, like almost all the promotion that they need in some regards.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder just about, I mean, we know almost all the Q1 fight cards at this point, fight nights and, you know, numbered events. There's a couple of fight night headliners still to be made, but like, would you, I guess, assess what we have so far? Like, would you have expected something different? I think there's one undisputed title fight in the first quarter. We got an interim, we got a BMF, we got an undisputed. Obviously that was not the plan. They intended to have more than that, but given the way things have worked out, the fight night headliners, does it feel like this is their best foot forward? Or in the back of your mind, is the things we've been hearing from Joe Rogan and John Anik and stuff, like, are they keeping bullets in the chamber to try to stack this White House card, and this is why it looks like this? Or do you think maybe it would look like this regardless?
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty cyclical to a certain degree. I think we've seen that before, right, where there'll be like a quarter where it's kind of like you just feel like you're going through the motions, and then all of a sudden you'll be like, damn, that November pay-per-view is good and that December pay-per-view is good. So I think for better or worse, the reason that the UFC has become such a machine is their schedule, their ability to say, like, you know, we're going to maximize the amount of, like, do all these events, try to put on as many title fights as we can in a year. But sometimes they essentially burn out of their resources, right? Like if you hit a time where you're having issues with negotiating, whether it's with Alex Pereira or whatever's going on right now with him, you know, you've got just, you know, champions like, you know, or big fights, Kayla Harrison getting hurt, it can really set you back if you overextend and book too many title fights too quickly, right? I think that's part of the reason we end up sometimes with these weird matchups that, mm-hmm. you know, it's not necessarily the next guy up that's fighting for the title. It's the guy in fourth, you know, the number four contender. So I think that's the biggest thing that makes the UFC money, but it's also the biggest thing that I think as a diehard fan hurts, like, the quality of the brand is the fact that it's just about the bottom line here is making sure that you have fighters in slots. And so I think that kind of, You suffer on the enjoyment side as a fan when that happens.
Yeah, and then you get a couple key guys unavailable, and it really makes you dig down deep, and we get a fight like this. I mean, I know I say this all the time here on Spinning Back, like most of the UFC product we see is not plan A. It's usually much further down the alphabet, and I think this is a pretty prime example of that. And it's not all to their fault. I think they efforted best, but you know, you can't plan for Ilya Topuria to have a personal situation or whatever it may be. So these things happen. But I think what you said there was interesting, and it kind of folds into something we have to hit on. We don't need to spend a ton of time on it because I feel like it's the in vogue thing right now to shit on Dana White and, like, you know, his efforts and these interviews and pick them apart and say he's not trying and he's lost interest and all these things. And I think there is some validity to that. I mean, like he said that thing about Volkanovski versus Diego Lopez in that interview with Complex. Like, if you don't like it, don't watch it. That's a line he's been trotting out for almost two decades now. But even when he would say that back in the day, and I remember because I had a moment with him, I think before UFC, after UFC 176, when he'd give us the full 30-minute sit-down scrums and we'd hold our cameras sitting around him in a chair. And I think it was after the first time it was reported that they did a pay-per-view below 100,000 buys. I believe it was Demetrius Johnson versus like Chris Cariasso, or maybe not him, maybe it might have been Horiguchi or someone. It was in Vancouver. I think it was Ali Bagatinov, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, we asked, like, Demetrius Johnson's one of the greatest fighters ever. Like, why aren't people watching him? And basically said that exact answer. You know, if you don't like it, don't effing watch it. And I said to him, isn't it your job as the UFC president to try to convince as many people to watch every fight as possible? And he quite literally picked up his chair and turned it in my direction and was like, oh, you're one of those guys who says I need to do this, this, and this. And we had a little back and forth. It was, you know, fine. It wasn't too heated, but, like, you know, you could tell his passion in defending why he said that was strong, was evident. This one is just says the same thing, but there's not the same motion behind it. So I see what people are saying, but how critical is Dana White's enthusiasm, excitement, actually promoting these fights in a way that gets people, you know, on the edge of their seat to the success of the 7-year Paramount stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I think two things can be true at once. One is that Dana's just showing up on a podcast or his presentation, if you're a real casual fan, you don't know much about the UFC, it still drives through. You know, I have friends that don't watch fighting and they're like, oh, I listened to him on podcast. Seems like a cool guy. You know, he's got that. Like, he clicks for us. People are very interested in him and they always will be. He's the biggest star in the sport in some regards. At the same time, I think it can be true that his interests, I feel, you know, he's focused on a lot of different things. He's got an energy drink. He's got bull riding company. He's got Power Slap. He's got, you know, whatever else is going on. He's with Meta now. So the enthusiasm in this, like this, the amount of detail that he can go into, even when describing like contender fights, has been significantly limited, right? Never mind kind of the guys on the prelims or things like that. So to me, this would be a great point in time for Hunter Campbell to start speaking more, you know, like I know there
this year, Nolan, it might happen.
I hope so, man. Like, he's super capable of it. You know, I've listened to him on all sorts of commission hearings, the ABC conference. He is an awesome speaker. He's somebody that in rare instances, like when the Conor McGregor USADA split came, he was the guy that was up there talking. I think he's super capable. His thought line is probably in line with Dana. And to be quite honest, he is kind of the brain of the UFC at this point on the day to day. So he is the one creating what the narrative they want it to be a lot of times. So I don't see any reason why 2026 can't be, you know, Hunter Campbell sitting up there at the microphone.
Yeah, I just wonder how that would work. Like, if he stepped a little more to the forefront, would that mean Dana steps back a little more? Because I assume the last thing you want is them both doing media individually and sending mixed messages or not being on the same page with something. Like, that's probably why it's not happening already to a degree. But as I alluded to, I think that could be in play this year, but I assume that means Dana isn't going anywhere. And do you think this is just what it is now? Like, could we see a turn? Are we just getting him on bad days? He's that disinterested in talking to the people he's talking to, or like, can you see a moment where, you know, the Dana White of old per se reemerges, not just for one night and one card? I'm sure he'll be out there at his best for the White House and things like that. But is he ever going to get back to the point where he's announcing Israel Adesanya versus Joe Pyfer and he's not reading their stats off a piece of paper?
Yeah. And this is like, for me, I know people are going to be like, oh, the MMA media is so critical of him or blah, blah, blah. Like, it just feels like a very dull time in the sport. And so to also then have a very dull presentation on top of it is just very difficult to watch. And, you know, you were given, when you were talking about your little spat with Dana a few many moons ago, like, I encourage people that are new fans to go back and watch some of those Dana White scrums, right? Because it is like a different sort of totally different planet than what the press conferences are like now, in terms of like the detail, like the thoughts that he would present that could be questioned upon. It was like rabbit holes and very aware of everything and every fighter and fighters in other promotions and going to Bjorn Rebney. Like, it was one of the best attractions as a fan that followed the sport at that time to wait and see a junkie or whoever post that afterwards. You just felt so like you learned like so much and you got so much perspective on the direction of the company, what was going to happen, what fights might happen. So obviously over time we've gone in the wrong direction away from that. I don't think the toothpaste can be put back in the tube. At the same time, I do think and I know he's got a lot of smart people around him. They're like, okay, like we need you to do maybe a little bit, you know, present a little bit more or give us a little bit more at these, especially with those announcements. I feel like have initially were very energetic, almost over the top. And now it's very much like reading off of a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's interesting. And as I said, don't need to harp too much on this, but I think it is relevant. And, you know, he did say, I think, to Stephen A. Smith that like CBS gave him 5 initiatives that he needs to complete this year. And like, it's all about reproving myself. Like, this is back to zero. What we did every year before, this doesn't matter. I mean, you proved yourself in a way by being enthusiastic, caring about everything so much. And, you know, that's what got the UFC to where it is today. And I'm firmly of the belief if Dana decided he didn't want to do this anymore, the train will go on. This is a big enough where it can be self-sustainable. And, you know, I think there is part of him that cares. Like, I know promos aren't coming out, posters aren't coming out with his without his approval, but you listen to him back in the day, like there was not a single thing with UFC branding attached to it that did not have Dana White's fingerprints on it. So that is no longer the case. That's, you know, a testament to what they built here. But like you said, he is he's the biggest star, and he's the biggest star because he's always present. The fighters disappear. They come around once, twice a year, three, four times if you're very lucky and you're a special guy, but he's the one who's there for every fight. He's not getting injured, you know, pulling out a fight. It's like he's the face of the UFC. So we'll see how this evolves. But like you said, if they're trying to cash in on this deal and people want it worthwhile, I think he needs to be at greater enthusiasm. And I guess almost can close on this, Nolan. I think it ties well into this. Like, you can say whatever you want about the UFC. You can be critical. You can be positive. All these things. Like, there's no doubt that this is the number one organization in the sport. They proved themselves decade over decade at this point. There's never been a time in UFC history where I think I would ask the question this way, because they've always exceeded, and, you know, it's only gotten bigger and better over time. Is there any part of you that wouldn't back the UFC and the thought of it being better coming out of this 7-year deal than it was going in? And then you could tie that into, I was going to mention to you the comments Laura Sanko made to me on the show last time around about, you know, seeing the prioritization and rewarding of exciting fighters. We see the people who are getting released, the Renat Fakhretdinovs of the world, you know, some heavyweights, things like that. Like, they're clearly the matchmaking. They're clearly trying to do something here where they're, you know, focusing on entertainment, pushing those guys. It all kind of ties together. Like, is that going to be bad for the sport over 7 years? Is this going to deplete a fan base? Like, is there any part of you that thinks this deal actually won't make the UFC better and where we're trending towards over these next 7 years?
Yeah, I think the deal itself, if it maintains the status quo, I think we've plateaued or maybe gone backwards a little bit, right? So, you know, again, accessibility for fans to be able to watch every card is huge. But I do wonder if it maintains this schedule, this pace, this amount of title fights on a card for 7 years, if it just becomes kind of like a restaurant. You go there, you have something, you're like, this is really good food. And then you eat there all the time. And it's just kind of like, okay, I kind of want something else. Like, that's what it kind of feels like to me, unless you're like, oh, now they serve this thing or that thing, or, you know, they, whatever. So that is kind of a concern to me. Is it just becoming, you know, maybe you'll have your Super Bowl once in a while, but for the most part, is it just like tuning into, you know, a random regular season NBA game where you're kind of invested, you like the sport, you like basketball, but you're not, you know, at the edge of your seat excited? And I felt like that was something that was really special about this sport, right? Was that there was a period in time where almost everything you tuned into felt big. And so that doesn't feel like that anymore. I think there, again, I don't know how much Paramount has in terms of say in the schedule, but I do, and this is not like an MMA Media Hates Fights thing, like, I just do think cutting back on the schedule would do the sport wonders. It would make nights feel more special. It would build anticipation. It would allow for fighters to heal, for the bigger fights to be made when people are ready, and not to miss out on those opportunities as well. So I think we've plateaued. We've maybe gone backwards. If we stick with this, you know, it's going to be where we're at, but just cut back a little bit, Paramount. See what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what they do over the course of this deal. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, to answer my own question, I guess I wouldn't bet against these guys. I think they thrive off being doubted and things like that. And
100%.
Again, you know, I hate to use the term rock bottom because I think we're like extremely far off from that. But historically, look, not just the UFC, anything, like, sometimes a little kick in the ass just makes the world of difference. And if Paramount after year one is like, hey guys, like, what's going on here? This isn't quite what we were promised. Like, can we, you know, accelerate the efforts a little bit more here? Maybe that's what leads to some of the things we want. So it's a very interesting time though, Nolan. As I said, doesn't change a ton for me up here, but I know it does a lot down there. And I'm curious to see how everything goes in Las Vegas, if anything is really different, or if it's pretty much just, you know, same, up until fight night where you're ultimately just click and watch.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out, but less than a week away now, or a little more than a week away. I don't know when this will drop, but
yeah,
we're getting there.
We're putting it out soon. So yeah, it's appreciate you taking this time, man. I thought this was an interesting conversation, one to have. Is there anything that you wanted to kind of speak on this that we didn't touch on?
No, man, just you guys can find my work at MMA Junkie, Tapology, all that good stuff. And Mike's going to keep killing it here, but Yeah, I'm excited, man. It's been nice to have this break off. You know, I talk about anticipation. I'm looking forward to one way or the other seeing some fights again. It's been too long.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to what you said there of, you know, having less events. You know, the absence makes the heart grow fonder in the sport in particular. So I think this one will do well from my expectations, because I think anyone who enjoys this stuff even a little bit is going to be kind of chomping at the bit to see something happen here. So, and how could you miss a Justin Gaethje fight? I don't care if it's for, you know, any title, anything. Like, I ain't missing that single fight from that guy, and it could be the last one for all we know. So
yeah, still up there, I think, maybe for me most exciting fighter of all time still, but we'll see if he can hold that.
All right, I appreciate you, Nolan. I'm gonna take a quick break and I'll be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Chael and to Nolan for their time. That was a lot of fun. Thought we covered a lot of ground there and went in depth on a lot of the big stuff going on right now leading into UFC 324, into this Paramount era. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. I certainly did. I know this episode is dropping a little earlier than usual as far as UFC 324. It's a crazy week for me coming up. Sunday night, might be listening to this after that, flying out to England. Is our late producer Abhi Subban's funeral on Monday. We'll be in England for about 25 hours, and then it's a long flight from London to Las Vegas, UFC 324. I will arrive there Tuesday night. Then Wednesday will be media day. Thursday will be the press conference. Friday will be the debut of Zuffa Boxing at the UFC Apex. And Saturday will be UFC 324. So I'll be covering that event with Ken Hathaway at MMA Junkie, and we'll try to bring you some good stuff here on the Bonfire channel as well, time permitting and workload permitting. Obviously the junkie stuff is the priority, but make sure you're following over there as well for all that content and whatever else we may come up with here. So appreciate everyone watching, appreciate everyone tuning in. As I said off the top, please make sure to like, rate, subscribe, comment, follow, all those different things. Helps us out a lot here as we try to keep growing the show. For now, that does it. Until next time, I'll see you all back here by the Bonfire.